the thing that was the hardest, I mean, any of the water stuff. I mean, I think that was the hardest.
Yeah. Physically.
For everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, it was hard.
Yeah. That was tough. Yeah. That was a tough day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She had to be underwater.
but in a way that like she's struggling but with no one like, drowning
beautiful
her.
Somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
It's anytime. I think that in general, like water stuff on a set is usually the hardest day. You know, like you could categorize that as the worst day, but I don't know that it's the worst. It's just the most challenging. Like it was freaking cold and hard. And
we are the
Get Realisms podcast.
I am Adam Chase Reddy.
And I am Christine Chen. And surprise, we're both filmmakers.
We get into it by sharing secrets, advice, and gossip in filmmaking.
And we even get our other filmmaking friends to share theirs too.
So please, everybody, join us for
an ode to filmmaking.
In this season, we get into Christine's feature-length thriller fantasy, Ursula.
A small idea that made a killer swamp mermaid a reality.
It's like have like lightweight ADHD between Christine and I.
Let's do it. We're starting. Say the things.
Welcome, everybody, to the Get Realism podcast, episode 78. I am Adam Chase Rennie.
And I am Christine Chen. And this is...
My name is Zoe Graham.
Yay! Sorry,
Zoe Graham.
Sorry.
I didn't know if I was supposed to talk.
I know.
We're awful co-hosts.
No, it's my... Because Christine was just like ready to fucking rock. I was ready to just go and my ADHD just completely disregarded the instructions that I was supposed to give you. So I apologize. I'm so sorry.
Let's do it again.
Ladies and gentlemen... In episode 78 of the Get Realisms podcast, I am Adam Chase Rennie.
And I am Christine Chen. And we have a guest.
I'm Zoe Graham. And I play Faye in the movie.
Yay, Zoe! We did it.
Fuck yeah, everybody. Welcome, Zoe. Thank you so much.
It's Zoe's first time. First time on a podcast. Mm-hmm. Yes. Is this your first time on a podcast?
It's not probably my first time on a podcast, but it is my first time on this podcast.
The Get Realisms podcast.
On the Get Realisms podcast.
Correct. Yes. We've been interviewing our lead actresses in the film Ursula, because it's coming out very, very soon. So last week we talked with Layla Anastasia Scott, who played Ursula. This week, Zoe, who plays Faye. And then is it Elizabeth first or Diana after that? I can't remember.
It is going to be Diana.
And then Diana Rose.
Diana and Courtney and then Elizabeth.
Okay. Yes. So go ahead.
Elizabeth is the only one who's been on, right?
Yes.
She's been, yeah. Diana. Oh yeah, I guess Diana hasn't been on it either.
No, I guess not.
You guys just like,
yeah, we're like, wait a minute.
Well, I could have sworn Diana was.
She's seen it multiple times, and I think she's like accidentally.
She's
like,
just an active participant. Oh my gosh, we just never had her as. We're just like, she was a guest.
So we're going to be talking about Ursula and why people should be excited about Ursula. And this is kind of fun. It's been like a verbal diary, basically journal of the whole process. And this is our first time really having chatted about what has happened. So now that you've had time to process and forget about the entire experience, how was getting the role? How was seeing the role? Like, how did you get involved, et cetera, et cetera?
Sure. Well, you guys know this, but for anyone else who's listening and doesn't know the process of how I got involved, there was another actress cast as Faye, and it didn't end up working out. And I had never heard of the project before. Kind of out of nowhere, through a connection through Diana, who plays Ari, she reached out to me. I taped for y'all. We talked about it a little bit, and then we did a full cast read. And that's how I got involved. And it was all kind of
fast.
It happened really fast in comparison to the way that everyone else was cast.
Because everybody else had been casted like a month ago, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, all right, we're ready to go film. And what, you're not doing this film? Other actors that get casted? And then we're like, ah, shit. It's only one of our most important characters. And actually, you know what's so cool about it is that Elizabeth, you and I had already met way before. Mm-hmm. And it was Diana that suggested, and I'm like, holy shit, why didn't I even think about, I remember the party, it was for Scare Package or someone with one of Aaron Kuntz films.
It was for Scare Package. Yeah. Seen anything yet. It was just like the last day of filming.
Yeah. And I had just watched Boyhood. And so I'm at the party and I'm like, Elizabeth, is that? I was so fangirling. You didn't even know. I was like, I hope she's nice. Yeah. So
funny. My boyfriend is he's texting me saying, you are the cause of the echo. He's watching us right now. He's like giving me live tech. So if you see me typing, it's me trying to fix my horrible audio.
It's okay. So funny.
I hear you fine, but I mean,
you that there's an echo on the live stream.
On Instagram.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I didn't hear it through Facebook, but I'm not listening to Instagram, so.
It might be a little bit. That's okay.
Maybe, okay. But honestly,
You know why it's echoing is because we all have earbuds.
Oh, I can have that.
Yeah, and so it's probably playing and then playing onto the Instagram live.
While Zoe deals with that, let me tell the audience a little bit something right now. When there are audio issues, just remember, ladies and gentlemen, and this goes for you too, Facebook, but we love you, Facebook. This is with peace and love, and this is coming from Adam Chase Rennie. With peace and love, understand that this is a free podcast. Jeff Keane, bad echo when Christine and Adam talk. I understand that, Jeff, but understand
Jeff
also.
Keane is my boyfriend. He's not trying to talk shit.
Every single week, there's always going to be somebody who will have a gripe with the audio issue, and that's totally fine.
He's just letting us know, but I know why. It's because Zoe's not listening through the earbuds.
But I have a point with this. It's a free podcast, ladies and gentlemen. It's a free podcast. All you have to do is just not worry about the echo. That's all you have to do. You just have to listen around the echo. How many by the way, Mark Maron, so many, like Joe Rogan, so many people have started with the like fucking toilet water audio. That is absolutely, I'm not saying that, I'm not trying to compare us to those podcasts, but just understand, ladies and gentlemen, that
did that improve though? Yeah, Jeff, did that improve on IG by any chance? Because I think that's
Am I still echoing like crazy?
Because I think
that's been the Get Real Zones podcast, you know.
But I'm pretty sure that's why though.
Better,
hopefully.
Yeah.
Yes.
I hope so too. Maybe. Are we getting anybody in the chat? Say spam one. In the chat.
Is that better, Jeff? I hope it's better. Well, let's just assume.
How's that, buddy?
Ask your boyfriend.
Jeff, we can't continue the podcast.
That's worse. I swear to God.
Gotcha. Copy that. All right.
Oh my really? God.
That's so weird.
Oh, free podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Free podcast. Free podcast.
I mean, it's y'all's free podcast. It's not.
Okay. It's a free podcast, ladies and gentlemen. It's a free podcast. You can find it anywhere on iTunes, Spotify. Free podcast.
Better. Yay. Jeff's, this is better.
Better. Okay. Yay.
Wonderful.
Okay. So that was why. But yeah, no. We were just saying that I had met Zoe at a party prior to ever, this was, and the party was like 3 years before I ever worked with you. Just as we may proceed. Thank you, Jeff. I'm glad we have your blessing. And I remember
free podcast, like, ladies and gentlemen, free podcast, free podcast. Celebrity. You can find this podcast available on Spotify. It's a free podcast. Free podcast. Available on iTunes everywhere. Free podcast.
And Elizabeth Ashley introduced me to you. And Jeff says, I'll allow it. And then that's how I met you. And you were really nice. And then that happened where we all started work together with Ursley. So I thought that was pretty cool.
I've told you before as well that I distinctly remember meeting both of you. I think it was the first time, maybe it wasn't the first time that I had met Elizabeth, but it's always been a general goal of mine to work with more female directors and writers. So anytime I'm getting introduced to a female director in Austin that I haven't met before, like, it's a moment for me too. I don't know if that came across when we were originally talking about it, because I was so nervous and our like group audition when you were telling that story. But it's always a little bit of like, I want to impress this person, I want to work with this person, because I just haven't gotten that many opportunities to work with female directors before.
That's crazy.
I've maybe worked with one other female director.
Yeah.
And I've been working for over a decade in Austin.
That's crazy. Why aren't there more of us?
That's a great question.
That is a great question.
I can go on a diatribe about that.
It's more rhetorical. You get it.
Yeah.
But I mean,
so you were nervous.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were nervous. Why were you nervous? Do you get nervous on most auditions, or was it because it was a group audition, so you got nervous?
Both. I think it was so exciting to consider being in a project with five other actresses, you know. Like I feel like often I get cast as somebody's girlfriend in a role, which I'm not at all. Like I've had so many great experiences on set not being surrounded by women, but the concept of I'm going to meet four plus women who are like my peers and do the same thing I do was really exciting to me. So It's not so much nervous, it's like excitement and wanting to fit in the right way in the group and in the, like, trying to take cues from their acting when you were doing sort of a group audition.
Yeah.
See what this character needed to be. So it is nerves, but it's also just, I mean, it's like any job interview, right?
Yeah.
I feel like it's heightened though in an audition, right? Like it feels like, I don't know, with the job interview, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like it's easier to kind of like sell yourself, I guess, in a job interview, but in an audition, you have to pour your heart and soul in like less than 2.5 minutes. It feels like I've seen auditions, and I've been to one audition before, and I was having like a nervous breakdown, panic attacks. Like,
wait, what'd you audition for?
It was. I honestly don't even want to talk about it. It was back when I was 18 years old. It was like for this. It was like a short film, but it was for some company. I don't know. But it was
you auditioned? I'm so excited. I didn't even know that.
And then you
gave me shit for me throwing you into the film.
Because that was the moment that I realized I hated being in front of camera, that I cannot stand being in front of camera.
But you're so good.
I'm horrible at it. I'm awful. Every time I see myself, especially like editing these podcasts, I see it. I'm like, all right, I need to take a break. And then, you know, I come back.
Did you see it when I had the little snippet at the end where he's in it or not?
Am I actually in it? I thought like wait, really?
You're in it.
Oh,
we're
no.
Co-stars, Adam.
Yeah, see, look, budding movie star. Yeah, you're
we
in
are.
It, dude. Yeah, you're wait, totally in it.
Does it feel bad while you're doing it or just after that?
While I'm doing it, because sometimes like when I was like younger, like I feel like I have to have my adolescent brain just kick in, and then I have to be like funny in the moment when I just need to just play in the moment instead of just trying to act funny in the moment, because my whole entire, because I have so much insecurity and anxiety that I have to like constantly have fun with everybody around me. So I don't want to go into a serious mode when I'm already like in fun, silly play mode. It's hard for me to just switch to that moment, which is why I respect actors and give them the patience and the distance that they need, especially for them to work and hone in on their fucking craft, because you need that time. You need that time set aside so you can just like focus, you know. I can't, like I'm just silly. Like I can't sit still, and I'm always trying to have fun. But yeah. And then afterwards I will see it. And then sometimes in the moment I will understand, like, maybe I shouldn't have done this, especially while we're fucking rolling. And then afterwards, that's when I feel even worse, because especially if they say like, yeah, we really didn't like it. You didn't take this here. Like that would destroy me, because it's not that I'm trying to not take it seriously. I am taking it seriously. It's just, I get really nervous. So I have to like constantly have fun and poke fun around everything, especially on myself. So
I have the opposite problem.
Yeah.
Because I'm not taking it seriously, acting is like fun, just like purely, I know I'm not going to make a career out of it. So like, the stakes aren't high for me. So like, I'm just like, hey, if I get in this role, sweet. You know, it's something I never thought I would be able to. So because of that, I think I come off extremely natural, because like I'm not thinking about it, overthinking or anything, because it's not my like career. Versus I have that same emotion when people watch my work though. So anytime I have to screen any movie of any sort, no matter how old it was or like what, or how confident I am about that film, I have those nerves that you talk about for when you probably auditioning or whatnot. Like it's so stressful. Like even when I hear my friend is like, oh, I'm watching your film like right now, they're not in the same room, I'm still like, oh fuck, you know? So
yeah, I relate to that.
Yeah.
Me too.
So I think that's what it is. It's so, but I wish I could just be like, oh yeah, it's fine. Like it's just been working, whatever. But when you take it that seriously and that you care about it so much, you're going to have that.
Yeah. Because I want to take this seriously, yet there are definitely people around me. And like, even as a set dresser, I work in the art department. Even as a set dresser, I will crack a joke and the art director will turn and look at me and be like, are you fucking kidding me for saying this joke right now? You need to take this way more fucking seriously. I've definitely gotten that before, but like, what, especially when you're acting and you got to be in the moment, especially you have other actors in the scene, that's even worse, because then they're depending on you for your reaction and your emotion emitting from the character in that moment. Then they can't take it seriously, and then that they can't do their job, you know? So I then feel even more guilty. So acting is just, and I'm super self-conscious. So it, especially if I upset somebody, if I truly upset somebody, that I carry that with me. I really carry it. Especially if I like, I don't know, like especially if I like make someone's day bad, you know?
Totally. Like, that's the worst feeling on set is like, thinking that you've let somebody down or thinking that you've made somebody's day harder. Like that's the nightmare of being on set. It's like so much worse than making a fool out of yourself. It's like slowing people down and not showing up.
Right.
Did you I guess what were the difficult moments on set, the hardest scenes for you on set, and what were your favorite scenes on set? Curious.
There's a lot of different ways I could slice that question. Okay. I think that Faye in general was a really big turning point for me acting wise in general.
Okay. Can you elaborate on that?
Oh, I'm ready. I think kind of skated by, maybe that's the wrong term to use, but it's the one that's coming to my head right now. Stated by on relying on sort of like natural instinct in acting for a really long time. And it hadn't necessarily been asked to do a lot more. And Faye wasn't me. You know, I think I've played a lot of characters that are me before. Yeah. And Faye, especially the scene, do you guys do spoilers?
Yeah, if it's not too big of a spoiler,
I'll step around it lightly.
Light spoilers, a sprinkle, if you will.
Light spoiler. There's a scene where my character gets into a really big argument with someone, and they're screaming at each other.
Right.
And I have a problem in my personal life of like having the ability to yell in general. Like even if the aforementioned boyfriend is upstairs and I'm downstairs, like I'll walk upstairs and be like, hey, I need your attention for something, rather than like yelling his name upstairs. So I was really nervous about, there's a lot of screaming that this does in the movie, and a lot of like vocalization. And so I was nervous for that. And really, I think the only way that I got through that was the person who I was yelling at. We got really comfortable with each other pretty quickly and talked about the concept of acting in kind of a bigger way. And I felt like she was really on my team. But the thing that was the hardest, I mean, any of the water stuff. I mean, I think that was the hardest.
Yeah. Physically.
For everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, it was hard.
Yeah. That was tough. Yeah. That was a tough day.
Yeah. She had to be underwater.
but in a way that like she's struggling but with still, no one like, drowning
beautiful
her.
Somehow.
Exactly.
It's anytime. I think that in general, like water stuff on a set is usually the hardest day. You know, like you could categorize that as the worst day, but I don't know that it's the worst. It's just the most challenging. Like it was freaking cold and hard and that was hard. My favorite thing to shoot, though, I think my favorite, if I'm thinking about my favorite moment on set in general, was when Tamika Siretti came to set. There was a moment where we all went to kind of the bungalow cabin that we were staying at, and we were all just kind of having a drink and talking, and everyone was kind of talking about how they got into acting, and sitting there again in this group of women and all of them talking about their process and the way that they think about work, and everyone having such a different concept of how they came into their character was amazing. It was like a secret little round table that we got to have
together. That's cool.
I've never had anything like that.
A meeting of the Avengers. Yeah.
Yes. It felt like that. It really did.
That's awesome.
It was very cool. Yeah.
That's cool. I didn't know that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I knew that you guys had, I had hoped, and I'm glad it worked out. For the audience who don't know, I put all the leads into a cabin. The cabin that they act in is also
and
the
locked them in there.
Yeah, I locked them in and be like, make magic. So the
be friends
the cabin that is film is also where lived and stayed. And for me, it was kind of strategic. It was like, you guys, I wanted you guys to feel like you are long-term friends and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I figured like when you are intimate and you live together, you just become, there's an ease to everything that comes with living together with somebody. Cause you're going to run into somebody coming out of the shower. You're going to run into somebody going to the bathroom and, you know, doing a deuce, you know, like it's just all
or walking in after somebody did the deuce.
Yeah. And
that's,
so there's
that's even more awkward.
This intimacy. And I'm just glad it could have like backfired and been like, you guys all hated each other. And then like, totally. Then it would not work well, but like, luckily you guys all actually bonded together. And that was one of the big things that people who have seen the film have said, that like, oh, you're the friend group is so believable. Mm-hmm. So,
and I still wholeheartedly think, because we also talked about this with Layla last week. Mm-hmm. And I wholeheartedly think that because Christine got to know in some fashion to know us all on mm-hmm. her set, every single one. Mm-hmm. She knew the vibe of us. So she knew the vibe of probably the cast. So she was already like, she already had the vibe check down before.
Yeah, vibe for me is so important. It's interesting because I think about it, I'm like, will I always not, and I know I won't, but I've wondered, like, I've always picked my crew because I know crew so well mm-hmm. because of my
right
my totally. Day job, which is first ADing. Mm-hmm. So totally. So I've handpicked my crew because I think the vibe is so important. And casting, I've always had an extremely hands-on approach to casting because I've had to cast my own shit by myself with no casting director. So I just wonder when that will change when you get to like the bigger projects. So you just can't do that anymore. And I wonder what that dynamic is going to be like. Because it's, I ate people.
It'll
like
probably
that.
Be something that you bump up against. And yeah. move forward like it,
at some point. Yeah,
yeah, it'll be hard.
Yeah,
but it totally showed, like, even especially in the makeup room, Roxy and Lisa,
yeah,
yeah,
did all of them
shout out
just were such good caretakers on set, and we really yeah. needed that, especially in the like water and mermaid
yes
sequences. That I think if had you not had that,
yeah, it would have been hard.
Personal, like, inside of like these people will take care of them. I think it could have been a disaster. You have to balance that person out. I talk a lot about filmmakers who design an intentional community, and I think that you're definitely doing that when you're
yeah. That community is so important for me on set.
Yeah,
I think it's just my favorite sets are the ones where like we're joking on set, playing music, having fun. You know, obviously when we roll, we're all serious and we got our shit done. But like that to me, the work life, what are we called? Culture. I think that's what yeah. they say in the corporate world is so important.
Very important.
Yeah.
And especially staying together too. That's even nuts. I miss the days where I wake up, you know, and I get to see Reese right next door, just pop in and be like, hey, what's up, Reese? He's like, hey man, what's up? Good morning.
That was a really good Reese.
Yeah. I nail a good Reese, yeah. that Lex Luthor motherfucker. I love him. I love him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of Ariesley got to work with Reese on the short. That was so much fun.
Yeah. Yes. And you won. You won an award, right?
From Carthage, Texas, which is
hey!
Lisa, I was very excited about that. Yeah.
That's so cool. Congratulations.
There. Thank you so much. I wasn't there, but I got a text from Lisa about it. So
yeah.
Excited. Yeah.
That's so cool. Well, that yeah. And thanks. The short looks awesome too. Reese looked like he did a fantastic job.
Well, I'm really we had Lisa.
And Lisa, yes. Yeah, I remember
that's
that. Right. Yeah, Lisa acted too, but she did a great job. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw the film, so yes, it was really well done, and I was very proud of he wrote me such a nice email being like, hey, I'm doing this because like you doing your shit like really inspired me to like direct and stuff. I'm like, whatever, like you were awesome. Like I was just excited that he shot the thing and edited it, and you know, that's I don't know, I respect directors that figure out how to do it on their own in the beginning. Because I think there is something with directors who understand all of the roles on a film set and why they are all important. I think there is, unfortunately, I've AD plenty, a lack of directors that have that, have grown up with the crew, and it shows. And so
it definitely shows.
Yeah.
I know that actors get a different version of the director than crew has, but there's stuff that
yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it goes from like a lack of understanding and perspective mm-hmm. with like mm-hmm. why, like throwing an actor through something multiple times is not like, it doesn't, you know, if you've been in that in those shoes and stuff like that. And I'm not saying, oh, me, that's part of the reason why I like to throw myself into films and act and stuff like that, because it's perspective for me. It's knowing like, oh, sometimes I can't tell how I look on camera at all. And I need somebody to be like, just shift to the left a little bit and angle your body this way, you know, like technical mm-hmm. things like that. Or that you can't do a certain emotion over and over and over and over again without it sacrificing something, you know? And I don't know. That was why I wanted to try the freaking tail on to see like, what is mm-hmm. it like? And I'm glad I did, because once I got that on, I was like, oh shit, I need to make these changes to the tail, because these things here and here and here are strategically not going to work. So that's why yeah. it was after we tested it that I realized we had to cut a slit in the tail mm-hmm. so that in certain parts she could actually be in the tail but still stand in mm-hmm. the tail.
But without breaking the tail, just being inside.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Without exactly. breaking the tail. Without because yeah. like expecting somebody who's not trained to be a mermaid to swim and act at the same time, it was just not possible, basically. But I only knew that because I went in and tested the shit out of it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just think it's important, I think, for directors to have some sort of understanding of the different roles or an appreciation, I think. But I'm really happy that you caught on in the community aspect of yeah. it. And I really think that it shows and in the film itself, because so many people who watch it are like, oh, like the friend group is so believable. Like it felt like me and my friends, like that's not a single person. Everybody loved the friend group. It was like women who watched and stuff just like really connected with that aspect of
it. Well, I mean, we're starved for that, right? We're starved for seeing female friendship on screen. We want it so badly. So yeah. I can totally see anyone, you know, even if we hadn't had chemistry, it's like, I still wanted to see these 4+ women interact and have issues with each other, like very real, deep issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what I liked when we were, Camille and I were writing about it. We wanted to show women that weren't perfect, far from it, that were dealing with their own trauma, but not in like a on your nose way. And like, oh, so much of that stuff is a trickle down effect. And it may be something that you all know. That was the interesting part, was how do we still convey that they all know of each other's issues without blatantly writing it out? These are my issues. Because together they would know each other's issues. So how do you explain that without explaining? It was, well, you know what I'm saying?
And I think that we did a lot of that on the fly. Like we had, like, I know that some of Faye's trauma history was kind of altered in the edit. And like, I know that there's a scene where Ari's talking about her family where you guys ended up changing a line that felt too harsh or too, I wasn't on set that day. I just remember them talking about like, oh, what could that line be that isn't so pointy at Ari? So it takes a lot of work to figure out the relationships for sure.
Yeah. It's a complete group effort. That my favorite part, I love rehearsal. I know there's directors that don't like rehearsal, but I love rehearsal. And part of the reason that I love rehearsals because I direct a lot of things that I write, and I am still not confident in myself as a writer because I really don't think I'm a writer. Because I write to direct. Directing is what I do. And so I gain so much through the rehearsal, hearing it with you guys, and because you have done the background and the research and being those characters, you kind of have an even more heightened understanding of what you think the character would or would not do and would or would not say, or how they would say it. And that's the part I find absolutely fascinating when I get to rehearse, because there's just things when you'll say, you'd be like, that just sounds weird. Or like, I wouldn't, and understanding the psychology behind why you would or would not do something as that your character, to me, is absolutely invaluable. So that's why I love rehearsals, is because I love hearing all of that, you know, that back and forth. And I think that's the part that, I don't know, I learned the most about the film. And it, that's also the part too, when you realize when you have holes too, and you're like, oh shit, you know.
I was about to say, I'm like, you can edit on the fly during rehearsal. Yeah. You know, it's just like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have that line.
Exactly.
Or maybe I shouldn't block that way. Shit. Okay.
Yeah. The worst is when people are like, so can you explain this and this and this?
Right.
And then you're like,
oh, I can't.
Oh no.
Camille always had great lore answers for why something happened the way with theirs. She'd always be like, well, I considered this way because of this research. This is the event that happened with this being, this magical being.
Yes.
I loved hearing that. That was so nice. That was tasty to my like logical brain.
No, Camille and I love co-writing with her. I think our strengths complement each other. Mine is a lot about the pace and the, like, I'm very good about events. Like, she's very good with dialogue, and we kind of mesh together where she'll have this long ass dialogue and they're like not doing something very interesting. And I'll be like, okay, let's take that and put that into these things that are happening so that like it, so that visually it'll look more interesting or something like that. So it was very fun co-writing with her. She may have a different opinion. we're also very different too. So
sure.
I remember we were working in Celtics because both people can see it. And I started to go in and tweak things, and it was like driving her up the wall. Cause she was like, wait, the page count was 90. Why is it 80 now? What did you do? What did you take out?
Yeah. I can imagine that partnership would be very hard. I was laughing when you were saying that you didn't feel like a writer, because literally last night I was having dinner with a director friend who project that we had worked on together, he wrote and directed it, and he's trying to channel his writer side right now, mm-hmm. I suppose. And he's saying, like, because of my director side, I don't see a script as the final product.
Correct.
So it's hard for me to finish it. It never feels finished because it isn't a fin- it's, that's not my final thing.
Right.
And I think that's a really interesting,
take on that.
Yeah.
No, this is exactly what it is. It's like I've had to become better at like being a writer, because I started to enter certain scripts into competitions and stuff, and I'm like, I see what I was saying, but like somebody else who's just reading the script is not going to see what I'm going to, because I've written it, because as if I'm going to direct it, you know. Mm-hmm. So yes, you're exactly right, where it's not finished, and it's a lot of the things might change based on rehearsals or what you're going to do or with your blocking and everything. So that's why I'm like, I could never write something and have zero direct, like without the knowledge that I'm probably going to direct it. Like I could just like, here's a script, go do what you will. Another director. Like if I'm going to go through the pain of writing, like I deserve to direct.
You better follow through with that. Yeah. Yeah.
Totally. Would you direct something that somebody else wrote?
See, I can do that though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the same thing.
That's why I can be, that's why I know I'm a director, but I'm not a writer. It's the same thing with editing and everything. I hate editing other people's stuff, but I can edit my stuff. I produce it, but same with directing. I can direct the shit out of anybody else's stuff, writing is so hard. Like for me, writing is so painful that my reward is knowing that I'm going to be able to direct it, you know, or I wouldn't be putting myself through all that shit.
Yeah.
Totally.
So, but Camille is a writer. And so working with her was great, because she would be able to, she can do like a time. I'd be like, okay, I need this done by the end of December. And she'll have her methodology, and she's boop, 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 and like you have these pages and it's done by December. Like I can't write with a deadline like that, you know, like shit just flows off the page for her. And for me, I'm just like, did I even write this correctly in the right format is half the time, you know, what I'm wondering. I'm like looking up sources being like, is this how we write this? Yeah. Type thing. But knowing that technically I'm the only one who's going to be really seeing it. Maybe like the rest, some of my crew, but I can explain that, you know? So,
right.
I mean, so do you write at all or no?
No, I wrote some in college. Just like that was the timeline of me kind of being like, am I an actor? Because when you start really early, it's kind of hard to tie that to like, oh yeah, I am this, you know? Is it like, did I choose that? Or was I just 14 and wanted to be on the movie set? So I've explored it some, but I've never had the like follow through to finish like a full length feature length script at all. I'll props for people who can do that.
It's it's tough.
Have you done? Would you want to write something like a short film or something?
Does writing even interest you?
Yeah, is writing interesting to you?
I think in general, actors can be great at writing dialogue.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they're the only people who can understand dialogue more than most writers, I can argue.
I think that I could co-write perhaps with someone who has a little bit more of a, I'm not sure which Christine or Camille would be the one, but someone who just has a better concept of moving things forward and plot, what they, you know, like specific action items. And I feel like I could go in and be like, the sentence is loud, like nobody would say it like this, or you know, I can just like hear that voice in my head a little bit.
Oh, that voice. And by the way, that voice never goes away. Totally. that voice is in the back of my head every time I turn on my computer. It's like, hey, dummy, you should turn your computer off. Go play your fucking video games. You're not going to go writing today. You stupid.
I
feel it. But I think like pushing that barrier through, you find like, especially with the news, like, and other things like going back into old inspirations. Like, I mean, we talked about this ad nauseum in previous episodes, but going back to old things that inspire me, like listening to old albums and reading comic books that I was inspired by, you know, and old movies even, you know, and other movies, new movies that I never even fucking seen before. That plays a part in writing for me, just in the sense of like, my brain is always on writing mode at all times, it feels like, because it honestly, like how I ingest content is not the same as like, I'm not trying now it sounds like I'm trying to like point myself out against other people. I'm not trying to do that. I like when I am in the writing like phase of this script, like I'm focused on writing so much that any other content that I ingest is most likely going to permeate in and go through into my script. Does that make sense? Like it feels like whatever I do or whatever I watch is going to be inspired by it, and then I do that. Like right now I'm watching, like, because like trying to understand choreography of fight scenes is so fascinating to me, and it's been fascinating since I was a very young child when I first watched Drunken Master when I was 11 years old by Jackie Chan. And it was like movie that fucking blew my mind. That could be one, hilarious, and two, fucking insane with action. And Jackie Chan's punches were of another fucking caliber that no one has ever seen in this fucking universe. Like the frames at that time with those giant Panavision cameras in like the 70s couldn't even keep up with how fast he was punching. It looks like a hazy line, you know, it's nuts, but he still has the talent of choreographing beautiful scenes, like fight scenes and stuff. So that permeates into what I try to write. So I guess my question is like, what inspires you? Like what gets you into the creative mindset for you to explore in?
Sure. I think that I have kind of a unique acting situation because I it wasn't, you know, a childhood goal of mine. It wasn't like, right, I'm an actor when I grow up. It just kind of happened. Almost by accident. I never planned to be an actor. So it's really, I think, been kind of a more recent choice to take it more seriously, think about it more creatively, as opposed to this person wants me on their set and I'm going to show up and do as good as I can. And as long as they're fine with it, I'm fine with it. It's a different mindset to, you know, be around Diana, for example, and hear her talk about how she works on craft. Like acting craft is so foreign to me, honestly. Like it's just different. It's a different approach to it. So it's something that I'm really figuring out. Acting isn't something that I think I feel like I have to do or I'll die. And right, that sometimes makes it a little bit complicated for me to figure out where that inspiration is coming from. But I know that when I get a script that I really love and connect with, like, that's very inspiring to me. It's like, this story means something to me. So I want to do the work to get to this one scene, you know, that to make that payoff make sense. You know, in Airsley, to use that as an example, I was really interested in this young white character getting to the point where she's taking up all the air in the room and not seeing anyone else's point of view. You know, again, but there's just some moment where it's very clear that she's not thinking about anyone else but herself. And gotcha. and doing the work to get to that point through other scenes of, like, as opposed to thinking of it as she's so selfish right now, like, how can I trick my brain out of that thought of, like, she's being selfish? Like, how can I
instead of interesting instead, like, of being judgmental about what the character is doing, kind of be able to go with the flow,
but you also embrace the character too for its flaws because of that, you know.
Totally,
and you see the positive in the negative, I guess, you know.
Well, I think work that I've done in therapy informs acting so much, and like books I've read, right, about trauma inform the way that I act and the way I understand characters, because I don't see that, again, using this as an example, I don't see Faye as an evil person or even necessarily as a selfish person. I see her as somebody with a complex history, and like, it makes logical sense that she would get to these conclusions. It's just the situation she's in.
You know, it's really interesting because I've watched recently Maid. And that character frustrates me so much. But I can't imagine, like, if you're going in, you're playing that character, that idea of, like, you can't judge what the character is doing because you are that person and you're in that situation and you're not thinking outside of yourself, right?
Exactly.
So that's exactly, because I was watching it being like, oh my God, I would not do that. But then you can't really think of it that way because the character is not you. Right.
Yeah.
So I find that really interesting that what you were saying about how you have to go about getting past your initial reactions as yourself to a character, mm-hmm, and so that you can go back in and truly be that person without judgment. Based off their perspective.
My reaction as that character, or even as a reader, like, knowing that climax is what we need to get to, I kind of have to keep in both hands, like, yeah, we need to get there and we're not there yet. Like there's such a balance between, like, pacing that build up.
Yeah that's interesting. Because I don't struggle as much with it when I'm writing as I would think I would. But yeah, because I'm also writing some pretty, not in this case, but in some other scripts, just shitty, like, characters I don't like.
Yeah,
you know, like, as if I were to meet them in real life, not like them at all. But I have to be able to think and speak as if I'm that person without, like, without judging, you know, that the. But it's situational in that aspect, and trying to trying to really put myself in that. So that's, I don't know, long story short, I that's a really interesting way to put it and think about that.
I think I can hardly think about if I like someone or not, you know, like,
right.
Do I understand why they're doing this? Like, is this person evil for no reason? Like, I just don't necessarily believe in that in real life. So why would I believe in it? Unless it's sort of like a heightened genre movie of like, this person is bad to the bone. Sure. Whatever. Yeah. We're talking about different things here. Like, we're talking about something that's barely grounded in reality, which is hilarious to say, because it's a,
it's a fiction, but
but it is so grounded in reality and in relationships that yes. I think you do have
the emotions are relatable.
Yeah. I was going to segue from Adam's talking about stunts and stuff like that. And I was going to ask how much stunts have you done and what was the experience of doing some of the stunt work on Ursley?
It was awesome. It was so exciting to use my body in that way. I think I have issues with the way that acting can alter your relationship with your body. Mm-hmm. In terms of, it can sometimes, I've experienced like a disconnect between my brain and my body the more that I'm like working on something or anything like that. But then when you're doing stunt work, you really have to balance the like safety aspect of it too, so you're physically present. So it was really exciting. It was awesome to worry a little bit less about appearing feminine or beautiful or anything like that, and be like, you're gonna get dragged face down through some dirt. I'm like,
there's nothing cool about it.
This the past year has been a year of getting parts that challenge that side of my insecurity, and it's been amazing. It's like, it has really changed my relationship with myself for sure.
Because you get, there's no way you can make some of this stuff look beautiful. You're not going to look beautiful. No. You're not going to look.
No, or coordinated or athletic, or like, you're just going to look like a like sack of meat. And like, that's what you are. Too bad.
Right.
You're gonna have to deal with that.
Yeah. Like there's a commentary that I watched on have y'all ever seen Police Story? It's another Jackie Chan film, but I listened to the commentary and it was so fascinating because he was like, take any action scene ever in the history of cinema, there's never going to be one person that looks absolutely cool while getting punched in the stomach or getting body slammed or hit in the back of the head. You know, he is like, I would challenge anybody to keep a smile on their face while getting brutally fucking hit, especially in the way I do. And he was like, 95% of all the fight scenes, I look like I'm bloated. like hearing that from Jackie Chan was just like, oh yeah, he's not gonna try to win anybody here. He's gonna do it based off of what the choreography is gonna do and speak for itself, instead of just him trying to be in the moment and trying to, you know, he was like, if there's no joke, if there's nothing, if there's no gag that I'm gonna do, I'm not gonna do it. Especially like, there's plenty of fight scenes that don't have any comedy at all. In fact, there's some fight scenes that are just really fucking brutal, especially for a Chan film. He is like, the story speaks for itself. Thus, the choreography speaks for itself. He is like, that's the main goal. And if you're trying to look sexy while doing it, you're kind of, you're going at it in an ass backwards way, you know?
And it's such a trap. It's such an easy trap to fall into. Of like,
it is, yeah.
Like, as soon as somebody like sees you on a monitor and it's like, oh, you look great today. Like, it's really hard to not be like, where's my light again? Like, where? My cheekbone is where? It's really hard to push that aside. But again, it all depends on the role. I think sometimes you have to lean into some of that depending on the project. Like, I know, because we were talking about Scare Package earlier. We shot Scare Package 2, I think, right after.
Yeah.
And we had stunts on that as well. And there was like a slow motion stunt where I had to look badass. Like it had to be fake, you know, like it had to look like rad as opposed to sack of meat. And it was it was so hard to like align my body, like
perfectly,
like combine both of those sides of acting. It was rough. It was very rough.
Because how is that like, I mean, I don't know. It feels like that's a really like, that's a really long road to trek through. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like to just be fake and also make it look super fucking rad and super fucking cool. I understand like, you know, some like fucking Tarantino, sure, I guess, but also let it be the way it's supposed to be, you know.
I think it's just what this story calls for, you know, like Ursley calls
unless
for
that's
realism.
What the exactly yeah. And if that's and, what the story yeah. calls for yeah. especially in Ursley's case, yeah, 100% yeah, sure. I believe
yeah, it's interesting because, and then on top of that, safety and all that stuff that you also are, we're also making sure and thinking of and trying to make natural and
right.
I'm happy that I came from an editing background, because if I didn't, I think wrapping my brain around the capturing the stunt sequences and the would have been really, really, really difficult too. Because when you're doing those, there's angles that you're cheating for certain parts. Yeah. There is parts of the movement that you want to just keep doing over and over. So if for the audience who has never shot an action sequence and stuff, a lot of it is done in parts. And my brain thinks that way because ADing is very much like that as well. I'm constantly thinking of how do we break this entire fight sequence supposed to look like it lasted for 1 minute and it's one continuous thing. How do we break it up into manageable parts that also is safe for the actors, but also won't wear them out as well. And et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't think if I didn't have that background and I went in just directing just this fight sequence, I think it would have been extremely difficult, or just I would have failed miserably. But it's the fact that I had to think that way that I was able to do that fight sequence, because we were breaking it up in completely out of order sequences, you know, and people thought I was crazy. Like, why are we doing this one and doing this? And then why are we doing, but a lot of it was like, okay, you also are thinking if we don't shoot everything from this angle, then that's more lights I have to move to this side. Mm-hmm. And then, so it's that's where I'm like, directors need to understand. I think the best ones just understand editing. They understand why every other department is important, how you have to be flexible to manage everybody's needs to make that particular scene work. And you have to think about you're being tied up by your ankle and being dragged in the water, you know, type thing. Okay. Probably shouldn't do that 50 times, right? Like, let's do it once or twice. Let's rehearse it. Let's make sure you're and just do that. If we just do that scene, how do I tie from there to when you are tied up and all the stuff right before that, and just breaking up into these little chunks that in the editing room, it just all magically makes sense and fits together. So it's fun to hear your perspective of you having to not worry about not being a sack of meat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let your body be a rag doll, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is quite fascinating. Well, I was going to ask, you have seen the film, but not the most recent version.
No.
And, what were your initial reactions to it? Why would you think that people should watch it?
I mean, I can't wait to see the final film. I feel like I saw a pretty early version of it.
Yes.
The big thrill for me, it's hard for me to watch a movie that was a challenge for me. Like, the part wasn't just like, I'll show up and like not do that. It's hard for me to watch a project like that and not just be focused on myself or on notes, because Christine was asking for notes at this, of like trying to catalog, like, should, you know, oh, I do want to talk about that, I want to talk about this, I have a note for this. The thing that was really exciting for me was that my partner's niece came along, and it was her birthday, and she just she was laughing like I've never heard her laugh before. It was like an out of control excitement laugh at some of the jokes. And she's, I think, turning 12 at the time. And it was like, I forget that, like, it's about that, of like just seeing this thing happen and finding joy in it and being kind of a fan of the process, you know, like being hyped. And that was just like such a nice reminder in general, and like driving home with her and hearing what she liked about it and what she, you know, what she really responded to was very cool.
That's cool. Yeah, I remember you telling me about that, and I'm like, that's awesome, because both of us will watch it being like, no, it's, I mean, I watched this thing 50 million times, and every time I'm looking at it, I'm like, all right, is that pacing okay? Is the sound okay there? And then is this coloring there is okay? Yeah, I'm just like, it's just notes and notes and notes and notes. And it's, I think I said this in a previous episode when I was deep in the editing process, that you get so many notes that it's, you almost forget that there is actually good stuff in there. The reason for the notes is to make it better.
Yeah.
But when you're drowning in notes, it feels like, why the fuck did I make this?
Right, it's hard to see the bigger, brighter picture.
Sucks. It just sucks, right?
Like, do you have to be careful about who you ask for notes, because it'll cloud your brain?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing I've learned in this process, because I've, in everything else, when you're doing like a short film, there's this note process isn't as intense. It just won't reach the level of this note. This note process was intense, and I think what I learned the most was learning to see the patterns. That was the beauty of when you get certain notes and seeing patterns and realizing when there are problems. Being okay to feel how you're going to feel when you receive some of these notes, but taking the time to process those feelings and then revisit the notes with more of a logical brain.
Yeah.
So, because you're going to feel, even though you tell yourself you're not going to, and it's all notes and it's not personal.
Your emotional brain just wants to say, fuck you.
Yes.
I'm familiar.
Yeah.
My moment was, I got to a place where I'm like, this is great. I'm going to show the distributors. Their reaction was not what you wanted.
Yeah.
And their note was, for me, like, I was so enraged from the first like no process, and then just like then lots of self-doubt, like, okay, if they feel this way, then this must, you know, blah blah blah. And then when I was able to calm down from that, all the emotions, being able to sit there and ask why these notes, right? And I think that was the biggest thing I learned, was questioning every single note. And because when somebody says stuff, something like, oh, you don't need this scene, or the scene was too long or stuff, that may not be the fix.
Mm-hmm.
It may be too long because they don't understand why that scene is important, which means that there might be other places that you need to insert in that make that scene more relevant. Therefore, when the relevancy shows up, that scene, the length of it is fine because now we understand the importance of that scene, right? It's probably similar with acting, where if I'm telling you, oh, I don't feel this. Well, it doesn't, may not necessarily mean, you know, it may just be like, oh, I'm missing this aspect of how I'm thinking about this one particular, you know. But I think that's the part that I learned the most from, was that you cannot take these notes black and white. You have to dissect and go in and understand, like, why is this scene confusing to somebody, right? And sometimes you have to ask 10 people to finally find somebody, one person who can explain it in a way that you can comprehend. For me, the one thing that, like, I could not wrap my brain around and figure out how to make it clear, you probably know, was the whole connection with Ursula and the pollution. Mm-hmm. I could not for the life of me figure out, like, how the fuck to make it better. Because I'm like, I mentioned it here. The great thing was, like, all those things did continue to add and help that aspect. And then finally, one person said something and it just all clicked. So there's a moment in the scene where Ursula goes nuts, right? And my friend said, but if you shoot a bear, they're gonna go nuts. So why is it, so as an audience, I'm gonna assume that's why they went nuts, is because you just shot me, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to think, oh, you went nuts because of this other external factor that is not the direct impact of what I just saw visually with my eyes. So it's this, like, okay, so if you're, so that's the biggest thing I learned, was like, if you're trying to, if A, the audience needs A plus B equals C. If you have A something equals C, they're not, that plus B, they will make their own thought of what plus B is, unless you really put it in, shove it in their face that plus B is without a doubt this plus B. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that was the thing that, like, I could not wrap my brain around, because I would have A visually, I would have C visually, and I have some semblance of B everywhere else throughout the script. But just because I didn't show physically plus B, people were making like 50 other different, like, thoughts that I'm flabbergasted that they came up with those other, because they're not me. And so I'm like, really? Somebody thought that?
Yeah, sure.
So that, I think that's the, that's why the audience feedback test screening moments were so important, so eye-opening. And that's something I never done with any of my films, with the test screening. Because short films, not so much and whatever, but, like, I don't know.
I do freelance illustration than acting, and there's this concept in freelance design work that is, if you get a note from the client, it's like, why would I ever do this? Like, I hate this note. It's ugly. It's stupid. You need to be listening to the problem that they're thinking of, as opposed to, like, they don't know the solution. You got to figure out the problem. And I feel like that's so
relevant to film as well. Yes, that's much more eloquently said than my long-winded explanation.
But it took me a long time.
What it is.
To, like, get, like, it's so easy to get a note like that and be like, they just don't understand. Like, they don't even know. They don't know what that is.
Do they know art? No.
They just don't get it. Yeah.
My first response, for sure, and it calms me down to be like, okay, it's a communication error. Like, it's not that we live on different planets, you know?
Right.
So I totally relate to that.
Yeah, because it's so, I mean, we're human, and so the comments sometimes hurt. I mean,
sure, totally. Right. Well, people talk all the time about actors being crazy sensitive, and we are. Like, of course we are.
Hang on, filmmakers are crazy sensitive too.
Artists are crazy.
Filmmakers are super duper sensitive. Maybe even more than actors, because at least actors can, you know, let go of the insecurity, just embrace the character for itself.
Adam, you said it, not me. Okay.
Listen. You know? But no, it's just, it's so funny because like I've definitely worked on a set where they're just like, this fucking the talent. Am I right? I'm just like, what are you talking about?
Well, sometimes like, I've certainly worked with people where I'd be like, the talent. But anyway, I just, there's some, sure. In terms of us talking about like earning that climax for an actor, like that plot climax,
yeah.
Then when you change a detail over here and like in the actor's brain, it's like, I have this, and that equals this.
Yeah.
In my head. And that's our version of like A plus B equals C. It's like you're removing B.
Exactly.
And now it's like, why am I here?
Right. It can be a many other possibilities. B can be X. B can be anything. Exactly. So that's exactly. And then you go through the same process writing as well. It's like, all right, I changed.
Yeah. B.
Crap, that fucks up A and C and everything
I'm
else.
Right in the middle of that, right?
Yeah.
Now. I literally like this morning. I read my script and I'm like, oh, I gotta change all of B. In fact, I'm gonna throw B out the fucking window. I don't even care anymore. But I need to like, I learned to just walk away, calm myself down. I'm gonna do the podcast. I'll come back to it after I make a sandwich.
Well, Christine, have you ever asked for notes that aren't fixes? Like, have you been like, just complain about it? As opposed to being like, fix all the, you know.
Really? Are hard. We'll have stuff like, how did you feel in a certain way, or like how did this scene. I've learned to do this when I give notes, and I often ask, so you tell me first what you were trying to achieve, and then I'll tell you if I felt those things or not. I've had people say that to me, being like, okay, so what were you trying to accomplish here? And then I'll tell them, this is what it is. And then they'll be like, I didn't get any of that. Or I got part of that, and this is why. Or I felt this, or I didn't feel anything at all because of this, you know, type thing. And so I think you have to go into the feeling first before you can dive back into how technically you can fix it sometimes.
It's hard for me to not, if I'm giving notes to someone, it's hard for me to not jump in with like, and here's how you'll fix it. Like, I can't complain without giving you a solution, like, you know,
solution.
But it's maybe not necessarily helpful.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think the
interesting,
I think the gut thing that people want to do is offer a solution.
Yeah.
That's why you get all these different solutions and they may not be the right solution. And that's exactly, what I've learned while going getting notes.
You know what other footage you have. You know like what you have, you've already have cut, or you have like saved up. So you know, my fix of it is not necessarily relevant even. It's like almost confusing to the
people.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because I think most people, at least most filmmakers, come in with fixes.
Totally. Yeah.
And so that's why I like to show it to audiences that don't know anything about film, and they simply will just say like, oh, I don't understand this part, or like, I didn't get this, or I'll ask them like, what did you think? You know, why did Ursley go crazy? Like, I'll ask them things like that. So it's more about the story. And then retroactively, I'll start to see where this is where the patterns. Okay, well then people were saying this part was too slow. Does that link up with the way people are feeling in this particular section? So it's a lot of like, I feel like it's a lot of just analyzing. No, like notes, that was the biggest thing I learned, was just how to take feedback and how to process that feedback in a way that you can actually fix something. Yeah. Because it doesn't it doesn't, it's not black and white at all. I got so many notes that were like, oh, this part is too long. But what they meant was this other thing. Or like, I don't understand this scene. Okay, what they meant was this. Or like, or here's a lot of it where I started to pick up that I needed to do more digging was when people would say, oh, this scene doesn't work. And so I'd cut it out. And then people would be like, complain about something else that wasn't there before because
you cut that scene out.
The scene that I cut out was solving that problem. Totally. And I didn't realize that. Like, oh, there's a reason why there's that scene that I cut out that people said wasn't important because now it's triggering all these other problems. Definitely. Yeah.
It's like patching holes in a boat that's sinking.
Oh yeah. It's right. Totally like that. It's like, all right, I'm cutting all, you go into the extreme. You know, I definitely went through a part after the distributors were like, just cut 15 minutes out of it essentially. And I'm like, okay. And I went on like a chopping frenzy basically, just chopped everything. And then you get notes back and you're like, oh, whoops, I just caused these problems. You're like, okay, bring it back. Putting stuff back in here. And it's like, oh, that joke is no longer funny because it was that length of time that you had that made it funny. And so just go in and tweak and tweak and lengthen, delete, lengthen. It's a lot of trial and error after a certain process. I think it's like losing weight. Like the first part, when you first start, it comes off real easily, right? But it's the last 5 pounds that like you kind of have to like dial in, like, okay, is it like my diet or is it like my sleep or is it this or is it like a combination of, for that last part to go away. It's absolutely, it was fascinating, very stressful and frustrating in the moment, but fascinating. I have to 10-1. So
sure. Yeah, go ahead. We'll continue. You want to end this show?
Well, no, we can keep going, but I have 10-1, so BRB.
Yeah, no, go ahead. 10-1. BRB. No, but I wanted to say though, Zoe, like you're absolutely right with like when you receive those notes instead of just like shooting straight for like the resentment of that person giving you the note, just see the problem for what it is instead of what the note actually says. Yeah. You know, it's like you have to read it between the lines a little bit. And sometimes my contextual brain just doesn't put two and two together. And I see this and I'm like, oh, I hate this person for the rest of my life now. Oh, you know, I'm like, I'm like, but I don't like, I always want to approach it in a way that like, I'm like, listen, it's constructive. But sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's just, they'll throw out a solution because they don't want to be that person to not give you the solution. When really most problems are, you know, can be solved by the person who sees it as the problem. So they say, oh, well, here's your solution. This is what you're supposed to do. Instead of like, because you know, and at least they know, they don't know how the process in the way you wrote that thing or you made that piece of art, you know, and not having that thought process, I feel like hinders the notes, right? Because like you can't have not have a biased opinion on a piece of work when you didn't make it yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I totally hear what you're saying. And I also imagine that getting notes from people who aren't in the industry is also very helpful. It just,
right.
It's a balance, I imagine. Again, I've never had to act by like crowdsourcing direction, you know?
Yeah.
I've always, you know, that's just not how it's set up necessarily. So I wouldn't know, but it sounds right. Sounds right to me.
Right. But I mean, yeah, exactly. Like I still wholeheartedly think that like, you're right. It all depends on who gives you those notes and you have to ask the right people, especially there's some people who are outside of the industry that are perfect to get notes from, but then equally they don't know the material that you're working with either, you know, especially like when I write, I don't like giving people, unless they're writers, unless they are like writers themselves, they can give me notes on the things that I'm writing. Mm-hmm. Getting it from a person who doesn't write is like, I don't even take those notes seriously when I probably should. Yeah. And I feel like that's a weakness just for myself. But I think, yeah, wholeheartedly, like you kind of have to pick and choose who should give you the notes. You can't just take notes from anybody because they're not going to understand you as much as you.
Yeah. Well, it's a vulnerability thing too. Yeah. It's just like, there are certain people that I will always ask for notes for that I trust. And like, yeah, I don't know. I think I do it in stages. Let's just say that I do the first stage is with people that I really, really trust. Right. Mm-hmm. And then second, that I divide that into like two or three stages. And then when I'm at a place where I'm like, okay, now I can trust this with people that don't know anything about films, but I also still trust their opinion. So I try that. Right. And then, Layla says, hi, love you too.
Layla. Yes. Shout out to Layla.
Yes. And then finally the very last stage is when I'm like, all right, let's open it to the world type thing. And to people who don't give a shit about me, who just want to, you know, just don't, and then see what people say. Right. So I think it's different. It's because eventually that you have to, the public is going to see your work, you know, that's the hope. And you're going to be there, then there is no, then it's anybody's opinion goes. Right. So I think I work myself to that point where it's like, all right, now I'm ready for what the person that has no connection to this film, that is not a filmmaker, who's going to be your audience, what they're going to say. And, and then see, did you fix all the things that, that were the problems before, you know, or not, or so.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Take it in stages. Yeah.
You got to take everything in stages. So I agree. I think we're ready.
Topic.
Oh yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry. Go ahead. Just since Layla's in the chat, I was talking about her literally this morning about how at some point we were in the cabin on set for Ursula and she slipped into an impersonation of another, not someone you know, but a famous actor. And it was just like, again, it was this like magical experience of getting to be around all these actors and being like, I won't ever be that. It's like getting to like see somebody else's magic power. And it kind of like helps you define yourself of like, oh, I never, that was incredible. And I don't understand how it happened. And I never, so then I'm like, oh, well, what kind of actor am I? Because I'm not that kind of actor that like can do this like amazing chameleon thing, which she did as Ursula as well. But it was just, it was amazing to get to spend time with all of them.
Aww.
Yeah.
That's cool.
We always surround ourselves with talented ass people. That also goes for the crew as well. I've definitely worked in crews before that I'm like, how did you do that? You know, like other art directors.
Oh, all the time. That's like, how I feel about art all the time.
Oh my God. Yeah. When I'm so great.
At like Reese making a bowl that lights up,
dude,
not electrocute anybody and glows blue. I'm like, how did you think about that? Yeah,
I just put it's all a process elimination, you know, I just do it all together and it just it works out somehow.
He's so funny. Oh, Reese. Yeah.
But I love that guy. All right. Well, we're ready to take this bad boy for a landing.
I'm excited. Film's coming out in June.
Yay.
And we're going to, the events for Austin are going to be the first week of May. It'll be probably the first weekend of May. Hopefully you'll be able to.
Very exciting.
Kitty Cohen, I think, is where we're going to have it.
Say that again?
Kitty Cohen. Have you been to Kitty Cohen?
Yes. Fun. Yes.
Yeah. Great. Cause it's got that pool area. I'm going to throw some mermaids back there. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So I gotta go. I have to lock that in at some point. So that people know, we're going to have a bunch of limited exclusive events that we're calling it before the actual release in June. I'll go on video on demand, all over iTunes for sure, Amazon, that type of stuff. We're still in that process where we're finding a home for where it is. But it for sure is coming out in June. Leading up to that, in May is going to be our events. So go on ersleyfilm.com to find out what that schedule looks like. But right now, tentatively, week one of May is Texas. Week two of May is Louisiana. Week three and four are California right now. So that's where our schedule looks like. And then July, Florida is kind of where right now. So as we pinpoint locations and places, the place that we're going to update everything is going to be on ersleyfilm.com. So
find the party schedule there.
Yes, find the party schedule. It's going to be a big party. The movie is just a bonus.
It's going to be a giant party. I'm excited. Yes. I'm excited. And I'm definitely going to do my 100% best to make out to the Austin location. Oh, and I'll hopefully the Louisiana. I would love to get a chance.
Louisiana one's going to be big. I have an event person, Stephen Knight, here that's going to. So there's this one location that's like on the water that we're hoping people can like pull up boats and stuff like that to watch like a screen on the launch. I think it'd be really cool.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. I'm very, very excited. Can't wait to be. Yes, exactly. Hopefully, Layla, you can go to all the other stuff too. Once I have the events and stuff, I'll shoot it out to everybody. So hopefully people can, because we want you guys to be there.
It'll be great. I hope that it's a COVID willing situation so we can get some hugs and as well.
Yeah. Yes. Yes,
I hope
yes,
so
yes.
too. And also, ladies and gentlemen, on ersleyfilm.com, you can catch previous episodes of the entire season 3 of Ersley Film. You want to know the beginning stages of the writing process of Christine? Go back all the way to episode 1 of season 3.
You should. It's actually really funny. And we're
it's super great.
We're currently, I have a intern that's cutting little bits and pieces to show the emotional turmoil of Ersley. It's like, we are going to try to make this. We got this. We have money. We don't have money. We still have no money. Oh my God, we have no money. We have money. Oh God, we have to do all these things. Yes.
Totally. And Christine just passed out or doing work on her fucking keyboard while I'm doing a podcast and shit. The best. No, I miss those days because, you know, those were the days where I, you know, like we had this journey of, you know, leading up to this, like with interviewing all the talent and stuff of Ersley. And it's been such an awesome, awesome thing, especially with last week with Layla, shout out to her. And, yeah, I mean, like to see this, like almost ending is super fucking surreal. Like it, like,
what do you mean? It's not ending. This is the beginning.
You said you wanted to end season 3 of Ersley for the podcast like months ago. And then you're like, hey, we're going to interview talent and we're going to continue the season. By the way, we should start a new season. And I'm like, up is down and down is up with Christine. Unbelievable.
Things change.
I'm kidding. I love you, Christine. I love you. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Get Realism podcast. Get on getrealisms.com. Pick up your book. What are you doing? I'm literally slinging these books all the time and you guys are not paying attention. Get your poster too behind Christine. See that dope ass poster? $15 on the Get Realism's website.
Yeah, it's got like different movie terms. Yes.
Yeah.
It's colorful. There's lots of words.
It's what I did during the pandemic. I started popping out products left and right because I was like, I got bored and started designing a bunch of stuff. Yeah.
And if you really want to get nasty with Get Realisms, pick up a shirt as well and a book. Let's get it. GetRealisms.com, ladies and gentlemen. ErsleyFilm.com for all the previous episode needs and also the screenings of Ersley with a release predominantly in June.
Yes.
And it
will come out soon as well.
That's it. Next week, we're going to have Diana on the podcast. It's going to be so exciting.
Who plays Ari? It's going to be awesome.
And Zoe, please come back to the podcast anytime. Anytime. You just hit us up.
Next week.
Thank you guys. Thank you so much.
You're the new co-host.
This is fun. It's fun because like I don't get to hear a lot of this stuff in the moment. None of us have time to process any of this. No. So it's like fun to hear like what you guys went through and what you guys yeah. still felt. So mm-hmm. I'm excited for you to see the film. And
me, I'm so excited to see it. And thank you guys so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Yay.
We love having you and we want you to come back soon. That's it, Christine, unless you got something else.
Nope. Ursuleyfilm.com, everybody.
Ursuleyfilm.com. What are you doing? Get your life together. Ursuleyfilm.com.
Get it together.
Get it together. Instagram.
And keep going on Ursuley Film on Instagram. Cause we're about to do some cool stuff. Our makeup artist Roxy loves making drinks on her Instagram channel, the rocks it's the fox TikTok. Or what, and TikTok and stuff. Well, she's about to make some drinks that represent each of the characters. Yes,
Roxy's a dime delight, so I'll be
yes that. So and then there's going to be also an original drink for the Ursuley experience. So
oh my
yes.
God, I
want to
try the food.
Yes, you should
try. We have to be in touch.
Yeah, well, I actually was going to email everybody and be like, hey, is there specific alcohols that you guys like for as your character and all this stuff? And then we're going to incorporate it in. But she's going to make these specific drinks and stuff. And then I thought it'd be really funny if, like, you guys tried to make your own drinks.
Totally.
So. Yes, 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 darlings, yes.
That's it. We're done with the podcast.
Yes.
We're done. Goodbye,
I only
Instagram.
Have one hand. My hand is, but...
Tequila we for Ursuley? You. Tequila? All right, I'm putting that down.
Tequila for Ursuley. Tequila. That's right.
What would yours, since I have you online, what do you think Faye would drink?
Part of me, well, I don't know that Faye ever drank in the film. And
this
and
is
part
true.
Of me is like, they might be sober.
It might be so
after some experiences with clear liquors. I don't know. I'll think on it.
Okay. Tequila for Ursuley. Boom.
That's right. I love how just like about 10 minutes ago, Christine said, I gotta take this for a landing. I gotta go back to Austin and finish packing. You gotta land this thing, dude. And that was 10 minutes ago while Christine's like, don't you even drink?
My bad.
No, it's all okay. Right. It's okay. Listen, this is a free podcast, ladies and gentlemen. We derail all the time because it's a free podcast available on Spotify now. This is the Get Real Business podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for being here. But we gotta go because someone has to pee really bad and someone has to leave Shreveport now.
Yeah, I'm driving a U-Haul to Austin, then collect.
Driving
more.
Oh my god. Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
I mean,
I hope I Tetris the shit out of everything and it seems okay. Yeah. We'll see what happens. So
I your Tetris skills are on point, but are your janky U-Haul driving skills on point?
That's I don't know. I did used to drive an ambulance, so
that's
I
true.
Think it feels
that's
very true. Powerful to drive a U-Haul. So I
it
am
is.
A little jealous.
Unless like you're working with a janky ass U-Haul truck that like the steering wheel's stiff as shit and like you
even
can't
then,
turn.
Even then, it's like get out of
just
my way. I'm
rolling with the homies with the furniture in the back. Yeah, yeah, dude.
Enjoy it. I hope safe travels. Enjoy it.
Thank
if you're
you.
In a U-Haul right now, enjoy it, ladies and gentlemen. exactly. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. Instagram, thank you so much. Facebook, we're out of here. That's it.
Bye.
It's a free podcast.
Love you guys.
Free podcast, ladies and gentlemen, available on Spotify. Week. Free. Bye.